The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Man, jam-packed again today. I'll tell you, I'm so blessed. I have a job I love, but I'm obsessed with it. And last night, I just found story after story, topic after topic. I'm still writing stuff at midnight last night. And I said, it's going to be a great show tomorrow. Tomorrow at noon. Don't miss it. You're among the lucky ones since you're listening right now. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
So this is a little bit amazing to me. About 2 months ago, when these rock-throwing incidents began along I-5 and I-90, I said, well, it's obvious they have to sweep these homeless encampments. And I think most people knew that. But I swear, if I say something on the radio, I swear the city says, we're not going to do that if Monson said we should. When they knew it was the right thing to do. And yesterday we talked about, are they going to wait until somebody gets killed? And thank goodness that has not happened. But yes, they are now finally, 2 months too late, they are finally going to sweep this homeless encampment that was the source, they believe, of most of the rock throwers. And there's some kind of mass psychosis going on in this homeless camp because there are several people who have been arrested. And I mean, it's not just one guy. There are several people. So why they decided to launch a coordinated attack against innocent people driving up the freeway, we do not know. But drug use creates mental illness, and you just have a bunch of sick, sick people. And so they're going to go through, they're going to offer them services, they're going to sweep the camp, and then as you just heard Aaron say, they're going to adapt that area so it'll discourage future camping. Now, one thing they could do is they could bring in some jagged two-man rocks and just fill the area that's a green space now with kind of jagged rocks. A lot of places have done that around the country because you can't pitch a tent or sleeping bag on jagged rocks. So we might lose more green space alongside our freeways. They let it go on way too long. The way it happened yesterday, and I need your help. Somebody listening right now knows who the guy is. When his vehicle was hit, he got out of his car alongside the freeway on I-90. He got out of his car, and the DOT cam is very cool. He is running up the shoulder of the freeway against traffic, and he's chasing the guy who pelted seven vehicles with rocks. But we've reached out through the state patrol, and most media outlets have, you know, everybody wants to track down this guy. Somebody knows who he is. Get me the contact, because I really want to talk to this guy, because I love what he did. And unfortunately, however, it shouldn't resort to this. This is what happens when we have politicians who do not protect and do not care about public safety. You are going to see more vigilantism. I'm sure the state patrol doesn't want citizens pulling off to the side of a freeway and running up the shoulder chasing a criminal. But we had to. This guy is a hero. I want to talk to him. So if you know who he is, if you have a contact, Nicole will reach out. 98973. Text me the info. We've tried going through official channels, and now I'm going through an even more official channel. You. So, yeah, if you got this guy's info, because I loved what he did. A young woman who was hit by those flying rocks yesterday in her car, she's going to join me at 12:30, right after the bottom of the hour, and we will hear what the experience was like from her perspective. So got you covered on that as we get rolling here. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Okay, now I'm talking to you in particular if you live or work in Edmonds. For as long as I've been alive, Edmonds has been not just cute, but just a great, it's always had a great vibe. And I know a lot of people who live in Edmonds, and I am wondering, what in the heck have you done with your city, with the people you've elected? Because you want to talk about mass psychosis. Edmonds is it. And, you know, this quiet, beautiful little seaside town is the vibe that Edmonds always had. And now it has just become a communist enclave, apparently. So the city of Edmonds just announced that they have established a new online portal to report incidents of bias, discrimination, and hate. Now, they say if somebody commits a crime of bias, discrimination, and hate, you should still call 911. But they said this new website portal gives residents a place to let the city know about non-criminal issues of concern. This is what communist nations do, where they get citizens to rat out other citizens to the government. Then the government can compile a blacklist. Then in our case, in a free country where we have public records, people can request who's been ratted out in Edmonds, and they can engage in a little private witch hunt against them for no crime being committed. According to a city announcement, the new reporting tool was recommended by the newly established Edmonds Diversity Commission. Yay. They say the portal will be monitored by city staff. Incidents will be logged and then forwarded to the appropriate department. So people who do not commit a crime, because there are hate crimes and there are discrimination crimes. But this is just if somebody gets their feelings hurt. If so, look, who isn't biased? You can report incidents of bias. Every single human being is biased. Whether it's, well, you think politically, or you like the Mariners more than the Yankees, or whatever. Everybody's biased. So now all these people who get their feelings hurt in Edmonds, I mean, this is communism. But of course, Edmonds has been trending this way for a long time. Remember last year when the city council president, Adrian Fraley Monias, told King Five why Edmonds needed a black police chief.
In this time for Edmonds, I think we could use Chief Pruitt.
What do you mean by that at this time?
Well, with all the racism in Edmonds and somebody who's had that experience in their life, I think that's important.
With all the racism in Edmonds, I've never seen any racism in Edmonds. The people I know who live there are all just wonderful, good-hearted, open, loving people. But you elect a city council president who thinks that you're a racist enclave. You establish this bogus diversity commission that has a portal where you can rat out your neighbors if they hurt your feelings. The most sensitive among us can create a public record document of somebody that they just don't like. And then witch hunts can ensue. I cannot believe what has happened to this city. And so I ask you, if you live there, I'd really like to hear from you. I'd like you to text in. If you live in Edmonds, what have you done with the elections? How in the world have you elected somebody who calls all of you racists and create a set of circumstances where I can rightly call a lot of people in the public life there communists? It's insane. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, big local.
You also heard in the top of the hour news, Aaron talking about the sheriffs around the state. We have 39 counties, and 37 sheriffs got together and signed a letter promising to uphold your constitutional rights. Now, this is a great thing these sheriffs are doing. By the way, one of the two who did not sign it, Mitzi Jo Hanknik. She said, well, I'm going to be out at the end of the year. Well, you're still sheriff here in July, Mitzi, and you could pledge to protect constitutional rights as well. Now, why are the sheriffs doing this? A lot of them recognize that a citizens' initiative that said you cannot buy a gun if you're under age 21, that is illegal. And in fact, a federal court last week ruled that is unconstitutional. You cannot restrict a gun sale to 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And yet our state decided to do that through a citizens' initiative. It's unconstitutional. And so there are a bunch of sheriffs around the state who have said that they're not going to enforce that law. The letter drive was led by Chelan County Sheriff Brian Burnett, who told our news partners at Cairo 7 that they do abide by the law.
So there could be a time down the road where the sheriffs may have to decide as a chief law enforcement executives of their counties that they would say this is what we are or we aren't going to enforce.
Okay, and then Cairo 7 also talked to what they called a constitutional lawyer named Jeffrey Needle. And this guy says that the sheriffs are dangerous because they have signed a letter promising to uphold your constitutional rights.
It's dangerous because it shows an extreme bias by the sheriffs of Washington State in favor of Second Amendment rights.
I'm sorry. That is as stupid as a soundbite gets. I should get this guy on the show. It's Jeffrey Needle. So it's dangerous because the sheriffs are showing a bias. Ooh, call the Edmonds hotline. They're showing a bias to uphold your Second Amendment rights. That's what they're sworn to do. You're sworn to defend the Constitution. And if something happens, if you know a citizens' initiative is unconstitutional and now ruled by a federal court to be unconstitutional, how can I? And that's why I laugh when I hear this guy described as a constitutional lawyer. And then he thinks that it's dangerous for people to have a bias in favor of the Constitution. Listen to this again. This is really amazing to me.
It's dangerous because it shows an extreme bias by the sheriffs of Washington State in favor of Second Amendment rights.
Uh-huh. And he had more to say about this as well.
They don't have some sort of a unilateral power to determine which legislation is constitutional, which is not, and enforce only those that they believe is constitutional.
Oh, is that like Jay Inslee with illegal immigrants, where one man decides what laws to follow and what laws we can ignore? Is that like Bob Ferguson on the same subject of trying to attract as many illegals to our state as possible? Is the constitutional lawyer also against that, I wonder? Because I'm guessing not. I'm guessing he doesn't want the sheriffs to do, because he disagrees with Second Amendment, apparently. He doesn't want the sheriffs to do what Jay Inslee does. And I'm thrilled that these sheriffs have pledged to uphold the constitutional. Now, and in King County, we're going to be the enclave where they can continue to do unconstitutional things. Because once Mitzi Jo Hanknik is gone, the King County Council, which is radically left, populated mostly by Seattle liberals. And by the way, we have Seattle City Government. We have Seattle City Council. We shouldn't even have Seattle people on the King County Council. You should leave the rest of us in the county to decide things among ourselves. I wish we could secede from Seattle. Or if Seattle secede from the rest of the county. But King County is going to remain because of that radically left council. They're going to appoint a sheriff who is radically left. The only county in the state where the citizens will not get to elect the sheriff because the citizens, in one of the most bizarre votes I have ever seen in my life, decided last November to take away their power and right to elect a sheriff and hand it off to a radically left King County Council that wants to export Seattle politics and all of Seattle's problems to the rest of the county. It's madness. Madness, I tell you. Finally, in the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
As you also have been hearing, Chris Sullivan's been doing a great job covering this. It's more evidence that liberal government hates poor and working class people because they've announced they're raising tolls all around the state again. They're going to increase on 520, 405, the 99 Tunnel, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. Not 405. I misspoke on 405. The other ones were all correct. And you think about this. They have poured $70 billion into the most criminally corrupt public agency in the history of the United States of America, that being Sound Transit. So I did a little calculating this morning. All of the projects where they're raising the tolls, the 520 bridge cost $4.5 billion. The 99 Tunnel, $3.2 billion. The Narrows Bridge, $1.5 billion. So you add it up and you're just tick over $9 billion for about 15% of Sound Transit's wild spending. For about 15% of it, they could have paid for all of those things and not imposed any tolls. Who can be told? Well, the people who can't afford to drive around, the people who are working class, people who have to get to their jobs, and you know, certainly wealthier people use those roadways as well. And then the poor people will either have to sit in traffic or they'll have to pay $1,000 a year out of their family's budget to give to the state of Washington. I will never, ever use a toll lane. I don't use them anytime on 405. I've crossed once the 520 bridge since they put the tolls in there. I have never used the 99 Tunnel. I am not going to give the state of Washington more of my hard-earned money, and I'm not going to reward people who have decided to punish the poor and working class so disproportionately by spending on their pet projects and ignoring the working class people of this state. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, man, we are just getting started here. Coming up right after the news, I will talk with one of the victims of that rock-throwing attack yesterday. She will join me next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, it was another crazy day yesterday at that I-5, I-90 interchange. This time, it was a man standing by the side of the road with a bag full of projectiles, rocks, bricks. Several cars were hit. And then in a dramatic scene, one of the guys that was hit pulled his car off to the side of the road, starts running down the shoulder, chasing the rock thrower, and was able to see the homeless encampment he went into, point him out to police, and that guy has now been arrested. One of the victims of the rock throwing yesterday is Tam Trinh, who joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Tam, it's great to talk with you. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Hi, this is Tam. I appreciate, you know, just getting the word out there and bringing awareness to the situation that's been happening in Seattle.
Yeah. Well, let's first talk about just the experience, because we have heard about what is happening, but you know, thankfully still most of us, 99% of us, have not experienced it. So just describe the moment and what went through your mind and your gut.
Yeah, so just a brief description of the moment. I was driving home from Issaquah going I-90 West, and I usually take the I-5 North ramp towards James Street, and I always have Google Maps on just to see if there's traffic. And I, sure, you know, as I was driving, I see there's yellow red line on the traffic on Google Maps. And I was like, oh, maybe I should take a different way. And all the cars were slowing down. And as I was slowing down, at this point, I already see the semi-truck pulled over to the right shoulder. I see the man getting out, and at the same time, I see a car behind him. It was a woman and her five-seater, and her front windshield was all smashed. Okay. So I was thinking, oh, okay, she just got a car accident with the semi-truck driver, but it didn't seem that way because I didn't see any, you know, dents or bump in the hood. So that was my thought process. But at the same time, as I was slowing down, in my right peripheral vision, I see a man about to swing his arm. And then it was odd to me already that he was, you know, on the side of the highway behind the shoulder barrier. So it didn't really click in my mind that he was throwing something until I heard it hit the car. And at that point, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's definitely throwing rocks. I see rocks all over the floor. They're pretty big cobble rocks, too. They're not just small, tiny garden rocks. Like, they're pretty big, and he was just throwing them. And he just kept throwing them, and I see him throwing more behind me. So at this point, I could have pulled over, but then the semi-truck was in the way, in one of the lanes going towards I-5 North. So I just decided to go home because I live 5 minutes away from the highway.
Okay,
and from
gotcha.
There, I didn't know what to do. I was just shocked. My boyfriend was calling at the same exact time, and he was pretty pissed because it's his car, and I didn't know where the damage was.
Oh, no. It's the boyfriend's car. Oh, man.
I didn't know where the damage was until I got home to my apartment and saw that it didn't hit my passenger window. It hit just the rim right above it. The dent's pretty big. It's about 6 inches.
So when you had a moment, you know, when you get home and you're reflecting on, I mean, if that rock had been just, you know, a half second different throw time, it could have hit the windshield. A lot of windshields were hit. Mm-hmm. And somebody is going to be killed. I mean, I am shocked, Dan, that finally they're going to clear this encampment tomorrow. But I've been mm-hmm. calling for that for months now because of these rock throwing incidents. I cannot believe that our city and state DOT have allowed this to go on for as long as they have.
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked too. This is new information I've heard because I don't really watch the news. But my friend recently, he just told me about somebody throwing golf balls and actually golfing off the Jose Rizal Bridge, just facing, you know, I-5. So right. I was aware that this was happening, but I didn't realize, like, you know, people are actually throwing things off the overpass bridges. There's been people throwing highway debris, rocks, like right next to the shoulder. And you wouldn't think to look right to your shoulder to see a man standing there. I was just kind of processing the moment to see traffic, and I thought it was a collision, but it wasn't. It was somebody, you know, that got hit from a rock and had to pull over because her whole windshield was smashed.
Right.
And at that point, she couldn't drive. So, yeah, I'm just blessed and lucky that I barely... Like, I didn't get hit anywhere that could have harmed me, but I just imagine, like, if my car window was down, like, both my window or passenger window was down, I could have got hit physically.
Sure.
Or could have hit my windshield.
How badass is the guy who pulled over and chased the rock thrower down? That was pretty cool, I thought.
I saw him get out of his semi-truck, too.
Yeah, so that didn't cross your mind? You weren't going to go chase the guy down?
Well, so when I was talking to my boyfriend, he was pretty mad, you know, and I was just shocked. I didn't even know how to process my own emotions. And
right.
He told me to pull over to help the woman that got her windshield smashed. And he's like, go chase the guy if you can see him. And I'm like, I am 5'2", 120 pounds. I cannot chase this guy.
I get you.
They're coming at me, throwing it. So I'm just glad that he got caught. The state trooper did follow up with me after around 6 p.m. and he said that he got caught and he's going to get press charges if I can follow up with a statement.
And I know you're a healthcare professional. I know that you've been kind of a frontliner for the last year, and I know you have compassion for people. What do you think should happen to these, you know, drug addicted criminals who are literally trying to kill people out there?
It's so hard to know his true intent and what was going through his thoughts at that time, if he was, you know, under any substances or having any mental health issues. I just really feel like we can work and help with this population. You know, I've read that it was traced back to the encampment that was nearby.
Yeah, and they're going to clear that encampment tomorrow, so that'll be a step in the right direction, because the proximity to that I-5, I-90 interchange, it has just become their prime target.
Yeah, and that's shocking to me, because I would never think, you know, as you're driving home, you're going to get hit by rocks and someone throwing it. And, like, working in the population I work now, I just feel like they need more resources, they need more support. I try to think good intent, and I don't, you know, he wasn't out targeting me specifically, and, you know, there might be some substance induced.
Right. Well, there has to be some mental illness to be capable of that. There's obviously some mental illness there, but we got to punish these guys too. So last thing for you, Tam, they caught this guy. There are probably others. With the number of incidents, we've had, you know, 30, 40, 50 incidents. Are you going to hesitate to drive that route still going home?
I even driving to work today to Issaquah, I was already weary just going towards I-90 East, and I saw a couple encampments and tents right by the bridge. I'm super cautious now. It's not going to stop me from driving just because it's my only route to work, and it's the quickest route. I would say, honestly, just really be careful. Keep aware of your surroundings. If you see someone standing on the side or over the overpass, to take caution and, you know, do what you need to do to get out of situations like that. Because I just had a slow reflex. Like, I could have sped up, or I could have stopped. I should have stopped, but I could have sped up. And just be really aware of your surroundings, because it could have happened to anybody.
Sure. No, I know. And that's the thing. I think everybody thinks, well, it's not going to happen to me. And yesterday for you, unfortunately, it did. Well, it's really nice talking with you, Tam. And I appreciate you coming on. And I just think it's so important to get the word out, to continue to warn people of the danger that's out there. And this guy that they caught is not the only one doing it. So hopefully our political leaders will be moved to more action by all of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on with me.
Thank you. You have a great day.
All right, you too. That's Tam Tran, who's one of the victims of the rock thrower that they caught yesterday. Your thoughts, you can text me at 98973, and we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, this topic always seems to tick people off when I bring it up, but we've talked for years now about this football coach at Bremerton High School, Joe Kennedy. I've had him on the show. He usually says no because I disagree with him. He would pray after games with the players from his team, from the opposing team. He would just go out in the field and pray, and he said totally voluntary. If the players wanted to come out, they could pray with me. And he has been in a long, long legal battle. And he lost in the in a federal appeals court just a few days ago. So now he will not let it go. He has lost every single time he's taken this to court. But the U.S. Court of Appeals, 9th District, they said, we're not even going to rehear arguments challenging our earlier ruling. So the issue is, should a coach at a public high school pray with the kids? And I am a Christian. I was a longtime public high school coach. And I would say a prayer on the sideline before every game. My girls had the option. They would say a prayer. A couple of my teams, they would huddle up right before they took the court and say a prayer. I didn't even know. I didn't know what they were doing. I asked them. I said, what do you say when you're getting your huddle? And they were saying a prayer. That's all cool. I do not think a coach should pray with kids at a public high school, because I had kids who were all high school athletes. And if they had a coach of a different religion, you know, if they had a Muslim or a Buddhist or a Wiccan coach, I wouldn't want that coach leading my kids in prayer or participating in prayer with kids. And if I don't want that for my kids, I would be a stinking hypocrite if I said, but a Christian coach, since I'm a Christian coach is okay. And I just get the impression that Joe Kennedy, he sounds like a good man, but as I said, he's been on a couple of times, and he knows my position on this. But as he keeps making news, he goes on friendly news outlets that are trying to boost him up. He went on Fox and Friends this morning because they now say they're going to take this to the United States Supreme Court. And he says that he just has gotten stronger from this process.
It's absolutely made me stronger, not just mine, but also my wife's and all of our kids and everybody around us, because we really can see the battle that's going on today over something so simple like your First Amendment rights. So, yes, I've had to dig in and trust God to get us through this.
Okay, but Bremerton has fired him, not renewed his contract, to be more precise. And he says that he wants to get this whole prayer thing behind him so he can get back to coaching.
Now I'm just kind of kicking back and waiting for the Supreme Court. I can't wait to get back on the football field. So I'm just biding my time and spending time with my family and doing everything I can to make people aware that, hey, the First Amendment is under attack and somebody's got to stand up for it.
First Amendment is not under attack. But I just get the feeling that Joe Kennedy, this is more about him. He loves the limelight that has come with this. He loves that more conservative media have embraced his case and his cause and support him. And so, as I said, Fox and Friends, I just think everybody takes a superficial look at this and says, oh, we're conservative, so we should support this guy. As a coach, as a Christian, I should not be praying with my kids, because if there is a kid who is of a different faith, I had a couple of Jehovah's Witness kids, they're not going to pray with a Christian coach. And then are they going to feel some pressure, whether it's real or imagined? Are they going to feel pressure? Well, if I don't go out on the court to pray, or on the field in the case of a football coach, if I don't go out on the field and pray, then I wonder if that'll affect my playing time. Maybe I better go pray. We shouldn't be doing that. If you're a public school coach, you are a government employee. If you want to pray with your kids, coach at King's or O'Day or Eastside Catholic or Archbishop Murphy. Coach at a private faith-based school. That is absolutely acceptable. But it's not for government employees. But anyway, so now his lawyer says they're taking it to the United States Supreme Court.
Well, we have several things, and you can read more about it at firstliberty.org. But we have 8 judges on the Ninth Circuit who agreed with us, who said that obviously what the panel of 3 judges did was wrong. And we had 4 justices when we went back up to the Supreme Court earlier in this case, who issued a strong opinion led by Justice Alito, who injected new life in this case. So we feel really confident that we're going to be able to go to the Supreme Court and get this finally overturned and restore Coach Joe to the football field.
They have lost 4 times in court, and now they say they're going to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. And so the question I ask is, at this point, is this about Jesus Christ or is this about Joe Kennedy? All right, we're going to take quick time out here. We have a fastest 15 put together for you. Brock Heward's going to join me next hour. I hate the Olympics all of a sudden. I used to love the Olympics. But, you know, the U.S. soccer women's team, they knelt before their game today. And then they go out and get embarrassed by Sweden. 3-0. Oh, it's soccer. 3-0. But we just seem to be represented by a bunch of people who can't stand America. And I don't have any interest in the Olympics for really the first time in my life. I'll talk with Brock about that. Lots more to come. We've got a busy news day. We are in the midst of, as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.